Welcome to AI and Journalism, the podcast where we empower journalists, communicators, educators, and other media professionals to navigate the world of artificial intelligence with integrity. I'm Yumi Wilson, your host, and in each episode, we'll explore practical ways you can use AI to boost productivity, stay creative, and maintain the ethical standards that our industries demand. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, this is your space to learn how AI can enhance your work without losing your voice. Let's get started. Welcome to AI and Journalism. Today's guest is Kelso Harper, a multimedia producer at Scientific American who spearheads innovative video strategies like their TikTok channel. With a background at Wired, Science, and Popular Mechanics, Kelso offers unique insights on merging tech with authentic science storytelling. In this episode, we'll explore how AI tools like Descript are transforming audio and video production, strategies for effective remote collaboration, balancing AI innovation with journalistic integrity, and practical tips for implementing AI tools in your own work. Don't forget to stay tuned to the end to hear Kelso's insights on the emerging AI capabilities that might shape the future of science communication. Kelso, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here.
To get started, I wanted to find out a little bit more about your background. So you've worked across major outlets like Wired, and now you're at Scientific American. What drew you to those outlets, and what drew you to science communication?
Well, I started out as a scientist or as a science student. I studied chemistry, and I found that I loved learning about science across the board, and I liked telling people about it a little bit more than I enjoyed lab work. So I sort of accidentally took a science journalism course, and that began me on this path. I didn't even realize it was a job before then, that you could communicate science regularly as your career. And I began going down that path towards writing and adding photo and video because I really liked the multimedia experience and different opportunities for storytelling it provides. I was drawn to these outlets because they're outlets that I've looked up to my whole life. I didn't even realize I was reading science journalism and popular science communication when I was younger. And now it's really cool to be a part of that work.
It is really exciting as a professor over at State to hear anytime someone can pursue their passion or the thing that they wanted to do from very early on. So kudos to you for that.
Yeah, I feel very lucky.
How has your approach to storytelling, given all of these new technologies, how has it evolved over these years?
Yeah, it's evolved immensely. I think in part because I was finding my niche in the field as new platforms were evolving. I certainly never imagined myself focusing in on social video or vertical video because it really wasn't a thing people were doing a few years ago when I was getting started out in the field. I initially thought I would be making science documentaries or focusing more on like YouTube explainers, which is still sometimes a part of my work. But more and more, social video has become a major platform, a major player in the communication world. More and more people are getting news and information from these platforms. And so I think it's really important for these institutions like Scientific American that have really good evidence-based, fact-checked information to be on these platforms and to be providing that, making it accessible to as many people as possible. So the field is constantly evolving, and it feels like it's evolving ever more rapidly. So I'm not really sure ever what's around the corner, but we're trying to be where people are and be a provider of high quality information and accessible, fun information whenever possible.
So is that what motivated Scientific American to start a TikTok channel?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're a 179-year-old magazine, been around for a long time, a legacy media brand. And so it did take a minute to get people on board with the idea that we needed to be here. And it's thanks to some younger people on staff rallying and making an argument that it's important for us to join these spaces. And I'm lucky to be a part of building that actively right now. Similarly with our podcast, with these other multimedia strategies that we're implementing more and more now.
So with the TikTok channel, has it been around for what, a year now?
Yeah, just about a year.
And what are the numbers like? Can you share a little bit of what kind of impact it's having in the newsroom and beyond?
Sure. So on TikTok, and well, we post our videos on TikTok, Reels, and YouTube Shorts. Those are the main three vertical video platforms that we focus on, largely Reels and TikTok, just because our videos end up being a little bit more than a minute. And until recently, YouTube Shorts was only a minute or less. We can talk about how that's shifted now and might happen there if that's of interest. But we grew our following to about 90,000 followers from zero on TikTok. We grew our Instagram following by, I want to say, around 100,000 followers. We've gotten, we just ran the numbers, I think 17 million views on TikTok, 24 million on Instagram, really numbers that we weren't seeing. And since, you know, the heyday of Facebook, before, you know, news got deprioritized on Facebook and before Twitter became what it is now. So it's really exciting for us to be engaging a whole new audience, a younger audience. I'm really proud that our TikTok channel is reaching more women, where this is, you know, historically, our audience has been more male. And so I think that's really exciting. And I think the quality of the engagement is higher than I expected. People are returning and really excited to see us there and, you know, excited to be learning with us. And we're excited to see where that goes from here.
You know, it's interesting and it's good actually to learn that the numbers, you know, people engaging on these social platforms is quite strong because, you know, there's always that argument that, you know, a lot of folks in the news business will say, well, younger generations don't want this kind of news or they want to choose their kind of news. And yet what you've shared with me tells me the opposite is going on.
Yeah, I think, younger people are engaging very much with us. And I think what's harder to track is that going to turn into subscribers now or down the line? The hope is that we build trust and build a strong relationship with our community such that, you know, they might want to pay for the work that we're providing for them. There's also opportunities for different ways to monetize on these platforms, but it's really about increasing our brand awareness and creating trust with our audience.
The thing that you said about monetizing, now there's obviously the subscription model, which many traditional news outlets will look at as their kind of bread and butter or their primary. But as you mentioned, there are so many other ways of monetizing, especially if you do have a following. Is that something that you're looking at, the team is looking at?
Yeah, absolutely. I really think that going forward, every news brand is going to have, I mean, they've always had a mix of, you know, and that's shifted over time, subscribers, ad revenue, programmatic ads versus sponsorships, things like that. And I think going forward, that having a robust mix of revenue streams, if you will, is going to be more important, I think, as things in the media world shift around. But for our part, we're exploring underwritten series, which we've done on YouTube, which are editorially independent sponsored series. So, you know, produced independently with support from sponsor. And it's about a specific topic, but they don't weigh in on how you're covering that story, how you're doing your journalism. So that's one way that people have approached monetizing on these platforms. It does get a little bit more complicated than, you know, your typical influencer or creator. We have a policy of not promoting any specific brands or products. So it's not as straightforward maybe as a typical creator, but there absolutely are opportunities still there.
And what about ads?
Yeah. So, I mean, we have ads like on any YouTube video, those are programmatic ads. We have ads on our page that are also programmatic. Something that we haven't explored yet, but I've seen on other channels like the Washington Post or other news outlets is they will just sell a spot in their feed as an ad. You know, they'll have nothing to do with it. They'll just sell an ad spot on their channel. Kind of how you would do it back in the day, I guess, with TV, but now it's TikTok and it's just an ad spot on TikTok. So yeah, so that's also an opportunity.
Nice. So you've got like room to grow, but right now it seems very helpful.
Yes, absolutely.
You had started to say short reels, vertical video on these different platforms have changed. Can you speak a little bit more about that?
Sure. I think the biggest change is actively happening on YouTube Shorts. Up until mid-October, all videos on YouTube Shorts were under a minute, and now they have opened to up to 3 minutes of video, which for us changes almost everything because we really couldn't post most of our content on there. We didn't have a big enough team to create short specific content, and our videos ended up being more in the 1 to 2 minute range above 60 seconds. So I'm excited to see what happens there, if we can grow an audience there. We do have an existing YouTube channel that historically has been more short documentary focused, but we're considering moving more into the hosted territory and seeing if we can even develop series, find formats that work on vertical video that we then expand into longer videos on YouTube.
All of that is just so exciting and must be, I'm just going to guess here, that it must be exciting to be part of such an important news outlet, something, you know, Scientific American being around for so long, but to be there, to be bringing in new ideas, I would think that that's exciting.
It is. I'm excited about it. I am really excited to be here at this time where I think a lot of evolution is happening. It's kind of odd and unexpected in such an old institution that there is sort of the startup energy on our multimedia team. We are small and scrappy, and we've, I think, punched above our weight, and hopefully we'll be able to expand more and more and be able to put more of our ideas into practice. And so it is an exciting time to be here, and I feel lucky to be a part of an institution that I really value and have looked up to for a long time, and whose work that I really, really like. Our journalism is so high quality. You know, we have amazing fact checkers and copy editors, and I really trust the information that we're putting out there, and to be able to spread that further through our multimedia efforts is really cool.
I would agree with that as well in terms of the credibility that Scientific American brings to the public. It's definitely an outlet where I can tell students or others, you know, when you read it, you should believe it. It's done its work. It's done its research. Shifting gears a little bit, you've talked about short form, specifically video. What are the other parts of the content strategy that you're and your team, your scrappy team, working on?
We also have a podcast called Science Quickly, and that publishes 3 times a week. We have a Monday news show that's kind of a roundup of what happened in science last week and what might be any events coming up in the following week. We have the Wednesday episode is an interview with an expert or another journalist diving into a specific story. And then Friday, we call our Friday Fascination, where we have usually a bit more narrative storytelling, diving deeper into a topic or a Q&A with an author or someone who's really thought deeply about a subject. And that's a little bit of a longer episode. So that's a lot, honestly. That's, you know, 3 episodes a week of a really high quality stuff with a very small team keeps us busy. But I really appreciate that. That's hosted by Rachel Feltman, who's a wonderful host.
Yeah, and I'll try to get some of that into the show notes. Now, I think this might tie into the way that we've come on AI and journalism, which is with so much going on, as you said, a lot. Does AI help in any way? And if it does, can you talk more about that?
Yeah, absolutely. The main AI-powered tool that we use in our work regularly is called Descript. And we started using it regularly early this summer. And it's a great tool. I'm not going to say it's perfect. It's still a newer tool, has some bugs. Sometimes it freezes up, but it's really robust and helps us a lot with our work. So the main way we use it is to create rough cuts for our podcast. It creates pretty darn good transcripts of your audio, and you can easily correct things. And then you can edit the audio by editing the text. So you're looking at the text and you can delete sentences, paragraphs, etc., and it will edit the audio for you. It's really fantastic. It's kind of a no-brainer, honestly.
Is this open to the public or is this something you're kidding?
Yeah, you should probably start using it, honestly. It's really, really handy. I do want to say, we can talk more about this too. I find this tool really valuable and we are using it. And I think just because it uses AI, I don't think that's a reason not to. I think what's important, and I want to have honest and frank conversations, is that these tools will shift what the workforce looks like Like already, it does change the number of freelancer hours that we would need because we're doing rough cuts into script. But maybe now we have money to spend on a high quality sound editor to do really fine finishing work that we wouldn't have been able to spend money on previously. So I've heard a few talks recently about AI that were all very much like, use AI for everything and it won't take your job. And I don't think that's a frank conversation to have. I don't think this is a reason not to use these tools, but I want to be very clear and honest, and so we can make informed decisions about what tools we want to use and how we want to use them.
We were going to talk more about it, and we might later in this conversation, but I do want to acknowledge what you've said. I also agree with that. Yes, here I am talking about AI on a show about AI and journalism. However, I'm very cognizant of the fact that it is changing the workforce. Perhaps the people who were hired to be copy editors, for example, might not be hired as copy editors. I guess my sliver of hope is that if we as individuals can learn the skills necessary to use some of these tools, then we become even better and even more versatile. Maybe the skills or the services that we once did, we won't do. But my hope is that, especially since I am in a university teaching these skills, is that when, let's say, a student in my office today, you know, wants to get hired in radio, I think what I would say to him is learning tools like Descript, which we are going to hear a lot more about in a minute, folks. I would say learning these tools, being able to put it on your resume, being able to tell the next person who wants to hire you or you want to get hired by, I can use these tools, will make you a stronger candidate.
I do agree. And actually, the reason that we really decided to start using Descript in earnest, I'd heard about it before a little bit on some YouTube videos about audio editing, et cetera. We had a new hire who was like, at our last job, we use this tool all the time and it was super handy. And I think we should start using it. And that really did make a difference. And, you know, there's so much more that Descript does than just text-based editing. That is the main thing we use it for. We'll still finish the episode outside of Descript, but you could finalize an episode in Descript. There are things to help enhance your sound. There's, you know, basically any AI powered tool is considered under the little underlord helper is what it's called, which I think actually is rather creative.
From my understanding, Descript is a tool that does a lot more than editing your video. And what is so interesting about this tool, which I'm going to be investigating for myself very quickly and very soon, is you can actually edit the video by editing the text.
Correct. Yeah, it does make sense. It's an available tool. It makes sense that it, you know, for my brain especially, I think looking at the words onto the page and just being able to edit exactly what I want it to say and then edits the audio or edits the video alongside it. It's not always going to be perfect, but you can go into the timeline within Descript and make your fine-tune edits. But yeah, it makes things a lot faster. I also really like their captioning tool because their transcriptions are so accurate and timed well. I've started using it more for my social video captions because I like the aesthetic and the accuracy of the subtitles. I really don't like doing it in Adobe, and so that's been a nice shift as well.
I am using Riverside FM. I'm not sure if you're familiar with this tool. Is it similar to Descript or...
So I don't know a ton about Riverside. I know that we're on Riverside right now as we speak. But one aspect of Descript that's newer is that they purchased a service called Squadcast, which allows you to set up virtual calls with people, does local recording of video and audio, uploads it, and then you can take it and edit it directly into Descript. So it's something like Zencast or something like this. Riverside, I'm assuming this is doing a local recording as well. I'm not sure. Does Riverside also have editing tools?
Yeah. And if you pay a little bit more, you can get, you know, these tools.
Yeah, I'm sure. I know Descript isn't the only tool like this out there. And I don't want to claim that it's, you know, the end all be all, but it has been very useful to us. I'd be curious to learn more about Riverside as well.
Well, I think the one difference, though, I will say, unless I haven't found the button on Riverside, is, you know, I can edit the old school way through the video. But the idea of being able to cut at a word choice, I haven't seen that.
Yeah, that's really, really very helpful. And Descript includes other features of other AI tools that I've seen. Like you may have heard of Opus.ai. So where it'll create social clips of a video, Descript also has that functionality. It'll try to choose your most, you know, viral moments, whether or not it knows how viral something will be is to be determined, but it can make an attempt to cut down social clips for you from your video or from your audio, as well as look at your transcript of your video or audio and draft titles or summaries, show notes, descriptions, or social posts you might make to promote that. So I think those are all things that are really good for just ideating, for inspiration more than anything. You probably always want to have a human review there, but you know, if you're brain dead and you need like three titles for a podcast, it might help you get started.
Absolutely. And just speaking, we've had Ryan Restivo on this show. He was one of the finalists for an O&A award. And
oh, yeah.
Ryan's app is called Yesio. Yeah. It's on Slack. So if a journalist wants to improve their headline for SEO purposes, but you want to have that privacy, not having your information shared with the LLM models out there, then using a tool like Yesio can help. But I think the bigger issue that you're bringing up is with the teams being reduced for whatever reasons, and some of them are technology-based, as people take on more, doing more with less, a tool that can help you write a headline or come up with ideas for a headline. Now, mind you, as you mentioned, it's incredibly important that you look at that headline, that you make sure it speaks to your values. If there is a policy in place at your company or the people that you're creating that project for, it's important to do those kind of, what are the ethical guidelines? What do I feel comfortable? Do I share that I'm using this tool? All of those things are in play as I speak about this. But what I will say is there are tons of tools now, even just using simple tools like ChatGPT, the free version, where you can say, hey, run an SEO-worthy headline for the story I created. So those are definitely ways that I think journalists can be aided in their work that they have to do.
Yeah, absolutely. Honestly, something that adoption of AI here is kind of like in fits and starts. You know, some people, it's really person dependent, and yeah, it's kind of a mixed bag, I'll say. But I think one thing that seems like a no-brainer, I heard about this at ONA, is like creating alt text for images using AI. And that's something you can review really easily. And honestly, probably AI would do better than, you know, someone who's trying to really quickly write some alt text for a picture right before they edit a story or publish a story. But yeah, there's all sorts of these like simple things that, you know, we're not paying a person to create alt text for us. It's just kind of something that has been added to our jobs. And there's a number of things that have been added to our jobs that these tools can help with.
Speaking of other things that the tools can help you with, are there other tools beyond or besides Descript that your team uses?
You know, there's nothing that I know of that we use really regularly. Actually, no, that's a lie. we do use, Adobe has a tool for enhancing audio quality, which it depends on the audio that you're putting in, how much better it becomes. But we will sometimes use that when we have a Zoom interview or a remote interview with not a high quality microphone. It can just give that a little bit of an extra oomph to make it sound just a little bit higher quality. We'll then, you know, continue to shape it and edit it to taste in Adobe Audition, but we'll use that to help punch it up a bit. My colleague and I have played around a little bit with ChatGPT. I'm curious about trying out Claude more, honestly, just because of my understanding of who is in charge of these various companies. But using these LLMs to create ideas for skits for our social videos. And we did end up using the idea of one for one of our skits. That did all right. I still feel, I don't know, this is probably just a personal hang up of, you know, that a lot of us have. We're like, ah, us humans, we got to be able to come up with better ideas than a computer, right? But, you know, sometimes the computer has good ideas.
And I wonder if that's simply because of the numerical like possibilities of a machine versus one person. And I'm reminded of that movie, The Imitation Game. It was about Alan Turing, who was enlisted to help break the Enigma code during World War II, I believe. And what was interesting is his argument was, okay, you can put 10 of the greatest minds in a room together. And yes, we will be able to come up with a lot because we are, you know, each and they're very capable. But what he said was, imagine that you take that knowledge from all of these great minds and more, and then you're able to run a formula that looks at the possibilities at a much faster rate to break the code. And that's exactly what happened. And I think about how that was a real precursor to what I think AI tools can do, which is consider all of the possibilities as you tell me what the greatest answer or the best answers are for now.
Right. Totally. I heard a few different people speak at ONA about the different ways that they're using AI, which ONA is the Online News Association meeting, which is where you and I met. And I think one of the great things that these models can do that our brains can't is really, like you're saying, like consume a ton of information and spit something usable out or go through a bunch of different possibilities and break it down for us. I thought it was really interesting that one journalist was using it on FOIA requests of enormous amounts of government documentation that would take, you know, maybe months to read through yourself. And, you know, you can double check some of those things, but at least it can summarize in a way that honestly, a human brain would take so much time and so much energy and probably would come up with mistakes as well. And another journalist was using it to examine public comments on social platforms or also FOIA of public comment to analyze sentiment of large groups of people, like maybe a certain amount of people think this, certain amount of people think that. When you're looking through, you know, thousands and thousands and thousands of comments, I think a computer can definitely estimate that much better than a human brain. So there are all of these interesting use cases that I've run into recently through these conferences and conversations that I think initially I was similarly hesitant to a lot of journalists where you just think that, oh, using AI in journalism is either you're using ChatGPT to write a story or nothing. But there are so many, like you've found on this show, so many different use cases that are really worthy of exploring.
Definitely. And, you know, we haven't even gotten into data journalism. Imagine being able to sift through hundreds, if not thousands of pages in a fraction of the time that it would have taken so that, you know, your team can get that Pulitzer Prize winning story out that changes, you know, the world or changes an idea or changes a system that is broken. And, you know, the purpose of journalism, when you really break it down, is to inform others, to tell the truth. And I believe that tools that can help are good. But as you have brought up so well, and I am concerned about, is the replacement aspect and also the ethical considerations. And it's interesting that you mentioned that, for example, when I asked you about tools, you mentioned Descript and ChatGPT, it's not so big in the newsroom, I'm taking it.
Yeah, I mean, I should have probably done a survey of all of my colleagues before this to see exactly what they're using and how they're using it. I played around with it and I've, you know, tried it a bit and used it for some things, but it hasn't become a regular part of my life. Part of me also, I've been following some of the changes in leadership and the, you know, nonprofit side of things and shifts in the board. And I think that is important. I do want to think about who is in control of the tools that I'm using and who am I giving money and information to. And so I want to try to make informed decisions about these tools because, well, in some things we don't have as much of a choice. So when we do, I want to try to make a high quality choice if possible.
Yeah. And so with ChatGPT, it's the concern about ownership then.
Well, that's, I think, part of it. The other part is it just didn't figure very regularly into my job, or hasn't yet. Just because of the nature of what I'm doing, I like the process of doing it myself or having my colleagues that I work with, specifically speaking to like social video and coming up with an idea for a skit or an explainer video or something like that. Or sometimes I just feel like I can do it better on my own, just reading a story and creating those bullet points. It just, you know, I could probably use it more, but I just haven't.
Yeah, I mean, if you don't need it, right? Shoe ain't broke. Why fix it? Let me ask you about remote collaboration. I know I brought that up in the opening. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I mean, Descript has been extremely helpful for remote really collaborating. One, you know, the aspect of having a really high quality recording service through Squadcast, so you can interview anyone anywhere around the world and ensure that you're getting the highest quality recording you can. It's owned by Descript. So it is, you automatically get a Squadcast membership, whatever, when you have a subscription to Descript. And that is like Riverside, where it is the platform in which you can conduct remote interviews and then take that recording and port it directly into Descript. I think eventually they will combine it to all be under the Descript umbrella, but since they more recently produce or purchase Squadcast, I think that's why it's separate.
I'm going to learn more about two things now, Descript and Squadcast. Now, is this an expensive tool?
Well, it depends on your scale, I think. It's not that expensive, though, I think, for what it provides. To be honest, I don't have the numbers off the top of my head. I don't want to just make something up willy-nilly, but it's in like the tens of dollars, not hundreds of dollars per month. And for us, we don't have like an institutional membership because there's not too many people using it. But if you were to scale it up, it would scale up. The cost would scale with the size of your team.
I'll definitely try to find out some dollars. I'm actually looking up some numbers here on my Google search. But it says Squadcast is free for Descript users. Descript offers multiple pricing plans, including basic for $19 per person per month with 10 hours of transcription, 20 uses of the basic AI suite, and 30 minutes of AI speech, and $35 per month for a little bit more. It can go up. Okay, that's not bad. Yeah.
And for all the tools it comes with, it seems reasonable to me.
What about cross-platform? Yeah.
Okay. Here, actually, back to your point about collaborating, I think I didn't quite finish answering your question, which is to say Descript also allows, it's all in one place, it's all cloud-based, so, and you can have project organization across different people and different users. And so I could be editing a podcast and be like, oh no, I didn't have time to finish that rough cut. Tell my friend who is either next door or four states away, can you pick up that edit? And it's right there, ready to go. You don't have to upload or download anything. So that's definitely made virtual collaboration easier, pretty seamless overall. But are you asking about cross-platform, like putting things on, you know, taking my podcast video, turning it into social videos, things like that?
Yes, I am. And because I'll just say a little bit from what I know from like Riverside FM, if I wanted to, I could use this recording and then I could edit, make smaller clips, sounds like short video. I haven't done those things because I work with a team called SaaSPod, and those folks are the people who edit my sound and all of that. I haven't had to do it yet, but it's definitely something I'm interested in doing and might be doing in the future. You know, because, you know, money lasts only so long, right? You got to start doing all the work.
Totally. Well, it definitely is built, is kind of has everything you need as a video podcaster. You know, it has everything for social video, for just audio. But I think for anyone who's trying to do both, it's got all the tools that you might need for that. You can just go in and take the edit you were working on in audio/video, the longer edit, and yourself, you can take a chunk out of that for a social video. You can also ask it to pull clips that it think would work well on social or create a highlight reel of the best moments of the podcast. I typically do it myself, but I could play around more with using those tools. You know, it's just a personal matter of taste. Sometimes I have been editing the podcast and I just know exactly which clips I want on social. But if you're running around and have no time, it could help you do that more easily.
So one thing I have a question on always and with AI tools is, if the person doesn't have any background or prior knowledge in, let's say, video editing, should you or should one rely on a tool that says, okay, we'll edit for you, we'll provide the highlights without having that background or knowledge of what makes a good video clip or what's a good highlight?
That's a great question. I'll be honest, I think because this is my job and I do it all the time and I think about it all the time, I haven't used the AI tools because I just assume they're not going to be as good as what I make. But I don't know if that assumption is true. So I say this with a big grain of salt because I don't know the quality exactly of the cutdowns that I would be making because I don't use it regularly. I think if I'm just a random person and I want to make a podcast and I don't know a whole lot about making podcasts or making videos, using a tool like this would make it a lot easier just to get started. But in the long run, if you want to do that for a really long time and make that your whole thing, do you want to only rely on those tools? I don't know. I think that's the world we're stepping into. It's like, I'd like to think that you would still either call up your friend who's a video professional or work with someone, and that would make everything a little bit better than just the automated version. But the reality is, I'm not sure.
Yeah. And I think you bring up a dilemma, if you will, which is, you know, as we go forward generation after generation, will that even be a question of not simply taking the answer as gold? Mm-hmm. And I only bring it up because since my evolution in the world of AI, which is quite short, right? You know, 23, right? So it's been, what, a year? Mm-hmm. What I'm noticing when I'm working with, let's say, a student who's never written a resume before, if you certainly can type that prompt into any AI tool and say, hey, you know, here's my information, write me a resume. But the question is, what do you know? How do you know it's good? And I think it, for me, it still comes down to sharing that with your advisor, sharing that with a professor, sharing that with a potential recruiter, because I think we forget that these large language models, when we're thinking of generative AI, were trained from all of the information that was already out there. So we haven't even talked about bias, but we should, which is, and I'll just start it off by saying, if all of that information that they programmed in didn't talk about women of color, for example, then relying on an AI tool for your answer, you know, give me the best case scenario for a woman of color who is in my age range to do these type of things, I think the answer is going to be a minimal, lacking, wrong even. And that's why I do believe at this point that we as humans and people with prior knowledge or experience need to fact check and even challenge these tools as they write things that are not quite accurate.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, that's honestly a huge, I guess I kind of forgot that that was a bulk of a reason that I haven't used ChatGPT more was the hallucinations. You know, it's a feature, not a bug. Like that is just, it never knows what it's saying and it never knows if what it's saying is accurate. And you don't either unless you double check every single thing in there. So that's definitely a big reason why I don't use text generation as much as these other editing tools, which seem in a way more straightforward because I'm not asking it to produce new information.
Right. And I noticed that if you give the tool your information, your original information, it's always going to be a better response.
Totally, totally. Yeah. That's honestly, that's what I'm more interested in and is exploring ways that I can use my information in a controlled way to produce some sort of output for me specifically and not just all of the internet ever.
You mentioned some practical tips, definitely about Descript, about some of the tools within Descript. Are there any other practical tips that you might offer for our listeners when it comes to their own work?
Specifically relating to AI tools?
It would be nice.
I guess that is the whole idea of the podcast. Well, honestly, my thoughts and feelings on AI and AI tools in journalism have evolved a lot in the last few months or so. As we started using Descript, as I've gone to these conferences where I've heard more of the use cases that people are, you know, how people are employing AI in their work. And I think I would just encourage people to listen, look around, poke around, listen to things like this podcast, which I guess if you're here, you're already doing this. But I think I had initial gut reaction to be like, nope, nope, I don't want it. I don't need it, you know, just because we can do it or everyone else is doing it doesn't mean I should or I have to, which I do hold true to the idea that just because a technology exists does not mean we have to use it and we don't have to use it for everything. And we can make decisions about how we want to use whatever these tools are and what they offer. And just because everyone else is hopping on a certain bandwagon doesn't mean you have to. So I still hold true to that, but I have evolved towards there are very helpful tools that are going to be, that are useful to our work that we should be adopting in our work, but just making informed decisions about what those are and how we employ them.
Speaking of which, that leads me to the last question. The emerging tools. You had mentioned tools that we should know about. Are there any tools that we should be thinking about? If not now, next year, which is just around the corner.
Well, I can't say I'm an expert in emerging technologies, but what's on my mind right now is that video generation is becoming better and better all the time. I don't know how to feel about that, truly. I really, really don't. But it's something that I'm keeping an eye on and curious about. And I don't know what that means for video in general. Similarly with image generation, I mean, that's getting better all the time. I don't really use image generation because I do have such, for some reason, my ethical qualm is like strongest there because it does feel, I'm a photographer, I'm a visual journalist. Visual media has been my bread and butter. I'm also an artist, friends with artists. And I know that this has largely been just taken willy-nilly from other people's creations. And I don't feel good about that. But it's here and people are using it, and probably the same will be true with generative video. So I don't know if this is exactly the kind of answer you wanted to this question, but this is what's on my mind at this moment as a video professional.
I think that is a perfect answer. There's always been a lot of buzz since social media about video. I remember going to presentations, video is king. Remember that? So I do think that video has always been important as we look at the digital foots, you know, the space and all of that. But I think generation of videos without people, without any of those resources, definitely sounds like it's going to be on the cusp. Just today, actually, I was trying to write the script. I'm using my various AI tools. And at some point, Monica, which is another tool, pops up and says, do you want a podcast script? And what I like to do is I always like to test all these different tools to see what answers they'll give, to see one answer could ever be the same, which it has not been. But Monica actually took my script and turned it into an actual audio podcast today.
Like with a speaking voice.
With someone else's voice.
Yeah. I guess that's the other tool that is on my mind is like Notebook LM.
Oh, yeah. I've been hearing about that. A friend of mine, just someone who I've done presentations and conferences, he emailed and said, hey, have you checked this out? And another person said the same thing, Notebook LLM.
It's a real trip. Yeah, it is. The use case that I'm most familiar with is people use it for generating a whole podcast from like a research paper or any input, many research papers even. And immediately I'm like, oh, it's going to hallucinate like crazy. You can't trust any of the information in there. But the voices are so compelling. It's really, truly terrifying. I don't know if you can add a little clip in here of what it might sound like. You know, it does sound like human voices with ums and ahs and pauses and mouth sounds, things that I try to eliminate from our podcast, but
they're trying to make it sound very human.
Yeah.
By going, oh, ha ha, and then laughter. And
yeah, it sounds very organic, but I haven't explored it enough to know the quality of the information it's actually providing, or if like maybe they sound like the same every time. Like if you listen to a bunch of these, are they using the same lines over and over again? It is wild, especially as, you know, someone who also works in the podcast space. It's really hard to know where any of this is going, I'll be honest.
Are we going to be needed?
Well, that's the other question I have. It's like, okay, well, you know, if all of these robots are doing our jobs, like, and there's a lot of jobs that could be done by AI or something like that. You know, as long as we have a plan for how people can live happy, healthy lives and make money somehow, or be given money or have a social safety, I don't know. Is this going to completely reshape the world? Does capitalism work anymore? All these things. I don't know. I want to read books and books about imagined futures, because I think that's what we should be doing right now, is imagining what kind of future we want with these tools and not just following along. Or I don't know, just jumping into everything without any sort of imagination of like what it would actually look like in the best case scenario.
And maybe even having some control over it.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
All right.
On that note.
I think that's a good place to wrap things up. So, Kelso, thank you so much for joining me on AI and Journalism today.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It's been really awesome to talk about this with you.
Today's conversation with Kelso Harper offered practical insights into leveraging AI while maintaining your journalistic integrity. Here are the key takeaways. You can streamline your workflow by using this tool called Descript. It sounds very cool. Definitely check it out. Talking about building trust, think about things like transparency as you use AI tools in your production or writing process. And this idea of focusing on enhancing what you do with AI is very key to what Kelso talked about today. So again, huge thank you to Kelso for sharing their experience on Descript, AI, and the future of multimedia storytelling. If you found this episode helpful, please subscribe and share it with your network. And please consider leaving a review. And if you want to learn more about Kelso, visit kelsoharper.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time. Thank you for tuning in to AI and Journalism. If you enjoyed today's episode, please subscribe and leave a review to help me connect with more journalists, communicators, and educators like you. If you're interested in personalized coaching, a LinkedIn profile makeover, or a resume revamp, visit my website at yumiwilson.me. I'm here to help you advance your career. And if you'd like to support the show, please consider becoming a member on Patreon. Your support helps sustain this program. I'm also open to collaborating with other media professionals and educators exploring AI. So please feel free to reach out. Until next time, stay curious and stay informed.